Military Mondays with David Katz.
Major David Katz, welcome to the show.
That was quite an introduction, I must tell you.
Yeah,
you put a bit of spice into the sting. I like it.
I do my best. I'm not going to be clear. I don't think I'm going to get the drummer thing for the military, but you know, you can only try.
Yeah, no, I came close. It was okay. Good. Yeah, I like the enthusiasm anyway.
Oh, that's always important. Now, we've got a fascinating topic today.
Yeah.
Because we want to talk about Libya, Algeria. I might even throw Tunisia in there. Because when you're talking from a military perspective, that side of the world, if you go back to the Roman period versus Hannibal,
yes.
You've got the Berber invasion of Spain taking place from that part of the world. That's where the Spanish Muslim heritage comes from. We talk about World War II with the General Rommel versus Montgomery in the Desert War. You talk about the seizure of power by Muammar Gaddafi. You can talk about the French war in Algeria. You can talk about the civil war in Algeria with the Islamists. I mean, if you want to do fighting, that side of the world, they know how to do it.
No, there's absolutely no doubt about it. I think one of the more interesting things, now that you raise it, which comes to mind, is how many Algerians and Moroccans from that part of the world, those French, those Francophone-speaking Muslim countries, how many of those guys fought for France during the First and the Second World War?
Yeah.
I mean, an inordinate amount. We're talking millions of soldiers provided by those two areas to the French army. And certainly they did their bit in the First World War. And a lot of the problems that you have in France today are just that, where these people are claiming French citizenship because they fought for France.
Yeah.
And in many, many ways, they're not wrong. You can have sympathy for them. So certainly an area that's totally filled with conflict over many, many years, back stretching back to the Roman times and before then.
And it's interesting you bring up the French issue because, of course, those places were all Vichy French in World War II. So
absolutely,
they were sort of
the
collaborationist regime. And if you read some of the history of that, in order to get sort of the invasion right of the rest of, you know, into India and Israel eventually, they really had to secure that part of the Mediterranean basin to allow basically free shipping so that you could do the D-Day landings.
Yes,
and the other side of the war as well.
Well, the first thing that Churchill did, you're talking about a very interesting, we're getting a bit off topic, and I'm liking it, I must say. I'm enjoying it. the first thing that Churchill did with the fall of France, fell in June 1940, suddenly to the German invasion. And the French set up the Vichy government, as you so rightly said. And the first thing that Churchill did was to bomb the fleet, the French fleet, the remainder of it. He asked the French fleet to come over to England and surrender, and then he decided to bomb the French fleet to make sure that it didn't fall into German hands. So that was quite a tragic part of history, where a former ally was turned into an enemy overnight. And as you say, the Vichy controlled that part of the world, Algeria, Morocco, and the Americans in fact landed there in 1942. They didn't want the British to land there because they knew there would be problems because there's a lot of hatred between Vichy France and the British. So they rather sent the Americans who they thought the French would be more sympathetic. And they were more sympathetic towards the Americans. And, yeah, that's what happened there in that part of the world.
And of course there's a great South African connection as well because, our contribution, if you like, to World War II, was initially in the West African theater in what we now call Namibia, was in Southwest Africa, and then in East Africa. But then we sent all of our soldiers up to Tobruk, in, I don't know where Tobruk would be classified today.
But Libya.
Libya. So, and they immediately all got captured, in that campaign. And it took a lot of South African soldiers out of the war, right at the beginning of the fighting.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, it wasn't right at the beginning. The South Africans went into East Africa, had a very successful campaign against the Italians, conquered Abyssinia, helped to conquer Somalia, and then off they went to the, northern desert, the Western Desert. And there they immediately got involved at a battle called, in Operation Crusader, at a battle called Sidi Rezegh, and they suffered a massive defeat at Sidi Rezegh, where the Germans crushed the brigade, the 5th Brigade. South Africans lost 3,000 casualties that day, prisoners of war killed and wounded. That was the first tragedy. And then in June 1942, as you say, quite correctly, they were surrounded at Tobruk by South Africans, and 13,000 South Africans went into captivity. So yes, we do have a footprint in that area. Quite a tragic footprint in that area.
There's actually a remarkable story. If you ever go to the Museum of Military History, they have the story of Job Masekho.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think it's a story that more South Africans should know about because it's just amazing. Job was a black South African. We forget this. It wasn't just a white man's war, right? No. A lot of black South Africans were involved. And he was captured at Tobruk and he picked up all the shell casings from the fighting and used the gunpowder in it to make a bomb, which he then used to burn one of the
Blow up one of the Italian supply ships. It was absolutely
quite a remarkable, and then I think he tried to escape as well. He was quite a remarkable man.
Absolutely remarkable. And he wasn't awarded, he was recommended for the VC, but he wasn't awarded the VC. I think he got the MC, the Military Cross, because of being black. So
right.
He was excluded from getting a VC, which was just absolutely wrong. Something that should be redressed, actually, even posthumously, should be redressed. Very interesting story about Job Masekho. Yes, part of the black native contingent. They called them the Native Labor Corps that fought up there. They weren't allowed to be armed. Many of them armed themselves with captured weapons, and they were captured at Tobruk. The rest of the South Africans, the white South Africans, were sent on to Italy and Germany in prison of war camps, and guess what happened? They kept all the blacks behind to help the Italian and German army at Tobruk. And when he stayed behind there, this is what he decided to do. He decided not to be passive. He decided to blow up one of the ships heroically because the consequences for himself and his fellow prisoners would have been dire. And he was recapped when the British took Tobruk a few months later. He was freed from German captivity. Very interesting story.
Yeah, and well worth going to have a look if you're in. In fact, I mean, again, that's completely off topic, but I just really think that not enough Johannesburgers go and visit that Museum of Military History because it actually is a remarkable place.
Wonderful, full of
stories and hardware. I mean, there's... for example, when I went there last, there's one of the, not, it wasn't the actual submarine, but the type of submarine they used in Pearl Harbor. It was like a one person submarine,
yes,
basically.
It's actually a German submarine,
So,
sort of a suicide type submarine.
And they have a proper Luftwaffe, was one of the first jet engine fighter pilots.
They've got that ME-262 two-seater night fighting plane, which is very rare. I think it's the only example left in the world. Well, let's give the museum a plug because it's an absolutely fantastic museum. It's one of the better ones in the world, really. It's right up there. It's got such a high standard of display. And I believe they've got many more items that are sitting in warehouses that could be up for display over there. It's just an absolutely fantastic place to take the kids and just go and enjoy a bit of our South African history.
Yeah, even like you see these days these movies with Spitfires and all, they have a Spitfire and you can climb into the cockpit, you know.
It's like for
kids, I think it's an amazing thing to see. And they even have stuff which is like around the politics of war, which I find quite interesting. So there's the End Conscription Campaign, which was obviously a big deal back in the day. They have like all the posters just to see. There's a big poster of Bart Simpson saying "Eat my call up," which I always thought was quite a
I know, it's brilliant. Yeah,
quite interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. They've got fantastic resistance displays that they put up. A lot of stuff on Upla, MK, that type of thing. Very, very interesting. It's a brilliant place to go and visit.
Yeah. So we got a little bit off topic.
A little bit. Not much. What were we talking about?
I have no idea. Let's take some traffic and then when we come back, we'll hopefully be a bit more on topic. So someone sending in on the SMS line saying that, talking about the French, that we hardly mention the Madagascar campaign, and it's very difficult to find info on. And it's interesting for me, I was reading a story about the Brodies, the famous Brodie family in South Africa, and there's a whole chapter actually on his involvement in Madagascar. He was stationed on the island because, of course, Madagascar was also like a French colony at some point.
It was Vichy French.
Vichy French, yeah.
And the South Africans decided to take it out of the picture because they were worried about the Japanese. They were worried that the Japanese would get a foothold on Madagascar, being friendly with the Vichy French, and that would cause all type of problems for South Africa. So they launched a preemptive invasion of the colony, and it took them months and months and months. It's a huge place, Madagascar, very difficult, and it hasn't got a good road infrastructure, and it took them months and months to actually get the whole island under their control.
And very interesting. And campaign. Even then, they weren't that sure if they were going to keep it. Like at some point, they were convinced that the French were going to come and take it back. But it sounds like from reading the book that basically it was just a party where they sat on the beach with guns all day, which was sounds pretty cool once they had it like secured.
The French fought quite in the latter parts of it. The French fought quite hard. Mm. The bitter enders, the diehards at the end. I forget the French general's name, but it took them a long time to subdue him. So it couldn't have been that much of a holiday. It wasn't, I suppose. Yeah.
From what I could see, living on the island, he was sent while living there. Exactly, with that kind of island.
But a very underlooked campaign. And I'll tell you, the only stuff I've come across, and perhaps your listening will be interested, is in a publication called Scientia Militaria, mm-hmm. which you can download off the, if you Google that, Scientia Militaria, and Google that, and then look for, there's a 3-part series on the Madagascan campaign. Quite extensive and about the only thing going at this stage of the game if you really want to read about Madagascar.
Okay. Well, there you go. If you want to upgrade your Madagascan military history, that's one way to do it. Now, another piece of literature which I thought is interesting given our topic today is that very famous book, The Day of the Jackal. And the day, I'm now gone. Frederick Forsyth. Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah. So he wrote that, and it's all about what happened with Algeria and Charles de Gaulle. Because of course, Charles de Gaulle became the president of France after World War II. And they had this issue with Algeria in that Algeria wanted independence, and Charles de Gaulle came in on this very strong anti-independence ticket and then turned around on a dime and said, actually, you know what? This is wasting our people and resources.
Yeah, yeah. It's just dividing French society to hold on to it. And in fact, it did. There was almost a coup. There was certainly a coup in Algeria where the French government in Algeria took over and tried to run the campaign. But a very, very interesting war, and there's a great movie on it, by the way, made by the Algerian government, which I suggest that you've got to watch. You can download it also. It's called The Battle of Algiers. It is a brilliant movie, and it encapsulates the whole campaign in this brilliant... You wouldn't say this is a government movie that was made. It is absolutely brilliant about the Algerian struggle against the French to end colonialism. Brilliant.
And what for me was so interesting about it is it also started to foreshadow some of the things that we would start to see in terms of what you think about military in a modern sense. So I think it's called the NFL or it's like the National Liberation Front or something. It's in French, so I don't know the exact things. But they were, I mean, the proper early forms of terrorism, you know, taking out of the local population, removing of moderates, all that kind of thing. We would think about as a terrorism war was really started in Algeria.
Well, a lot of the counterinsurgency doctrine originates from the Algerian war. So in other words, the French actually fought a very clever and well-run counterinsurgency operation in Algeria. A lot of the helicopter operations and just breaking down the Algerian cells and that type of thing. It was all originated in Algeria. So it sort of wrote the book on counterinsurgency doctrine. So from that point of view, a very, very interesting war.
And of course, the interesting thing about the Day of the Jackal is Forsyth writes about how when de Gaulle decided that they needed peace with Algeria, that his own parabats and military started to turn on him, and they had to basically break internal cells inside the French military in order to secure the peace.
Yes, because they wanted to carry on. So it was a mini coup in Algeria. They wanted to move against the French government because Algeria was actually a province of France, and France defined itself with its colonies. It was very much the same as Portugal. Is that Portugal, without its colonies, they realized wouldn't be the power that they wanted to be. And the same with the French, so they try to hang on as long as possible.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating stuff, and with consequences to this day, I would say, in general.
Absolutely. Yeah. So now, what do we see now? We see these massive battles against colonialism, quite successful, with a lot of blood being shed. And then, unfortunately, what happens is that you've got entrenched ruling elites taking over from the colonial government. And these guys are now sitting since their freedom and independence day. They're sitting with these entrenched elites. and
including in Algeria. I mean, I see that they just had protests there because basically those people were still in charge, and people were protesting to have those guys removed.
Yeah, well, they've had a moribund president, Bouteflika, who's been there for 3 decades, I think.
Yeah.
So that can't be healthy. That's not good. So you've got sort of Arab Spring 2.0 happening. And I wonder if it's going to turn out, because none of these have turned out very well at the end of the day. So,
although we are seeing, I mean, Algeria, Sudan, it's so far been less sort of bloody than some of the early Arab Springs things. So who knows? You know, it could very well be.
I think the military are treading softly because they can see what's happened in these other countries. Well, certainly Syria was a whole counter move to the Arab Spring. Very successful with the backing of Russia and Turkey, I suppose. And just overturned the whole thing and reinstalled that elite that we're talking about straight back in there. With I don't know what the cost was, hundreds of thousands of people dead for really no purpose at the end of the day. So one wonders whether these regime change moves now, but that sort of backed by the military, are going to have the effect of democratizing these countries.
I mean, talking about the Arab Spring that kind of started off in Tunisia, and of course, very famous. They're very proud of their connection to General Hannibal and the Romans.
Absolutely.
I mean, for people who are not classically minded, what was that all about? Because basically when you say Hannibal, people talk about elephants and Alps and all sorts of things. So where did that come from?
Are you talking about the Carthaginians?
Yes, the Carthaginians.
Okay, they basically occupied present-day Tunisia, mm-hmm. and they decided Hannibal was going to invade Italy, and he brought his army famously through the Alps with his elephants. Lost 60-70% of his military force in the Alps, and managed to take on the Romans and beat them in a number of battles. Yeah, very interesting campaign
and a big fleet. Of course, the Mediterranean theatre was very, very crucial for the Carthaginians.
So, I mean, these are countries that are steeped in military history, absolutely steeped in this type of history, and I suppose they draw on it. I mean, it's an amazing history at the end of the day that is used to define nation. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure the Tunisians draw on this type of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, going back to the World War II, I mean, we spoke about Tobruk earlier and that campaign, but eventually that was a crucial campaign and theater to actually get secured. So how did they kick Rommel out of the desert? Because that was really – that he was the – they called him the desert fox. He was considered to be a military genius in terms of – in terms of desert warfare. How did they win eventually?
There's a lot of myths surrounding Rommel. Rommel was very capable and very able at the operational and the tactical level. On the strategic level, as all German high command in those days, they weren't great at the strategic level. They relied on their operational and tactical prowess to win their wars, and it didn't work out well for them. I mean, you've often heard the sayings: they win their battles, they can't win the soccer, and they win their battles, but they can't win their wars. And that's for that reason, because they don't have the same strategic ability as, let's say, the British do, because the British lose most of their battles but win most of their wars. So it's very, very interesting. So how did they get rid of Rommel at the end of the day? He was a very wily opponent, and he was always outnumbered. Germans, by the way, are always used to fighting outnumbered. It's nothing new to them. They fight from a central position, being in Germany, and usually the opponents outnumber them by many, many times. So that's part of their doctrine, is how to fight when being outnumbered. So he was very wily, difficult to beat. And how was he beaten at the end of the day? He was beaten by pure attrition, by a pure numbers game, is that the Allies were able to muster a huge numerical and material superiority over him, and eventually battered him. Instead of using a rapier, they used a bludgeon to bludgeon him to his end. And that's exactly how they overcame him, by just applying bigger numbers, bigger economy, more logistics, and eventually he was squeezed out of Africa.
So he wasn't really out-generaled per se in terms of the Africa campaign, in your opinion?
No, I would say no. It wasn't the Allied game. The Allied game was never about out-generalship. It was out-logisticship. It was out
materializing.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It was a numbers game for them, and the Germans just couldn't overcome the numbers game. And that's what the United States is all about. It's a numbers game, is that they're able to produce like nobody else can produce. They can produce 50, 60 times more than any other country in the world. And they brought all that to bear against the Germans in North Africa. And, it was just impossible for them to overcome.
Yeah, and that then opened the way to as I said, to D-Day and to the Battle of Beersheba with the invasion of what was then Palestine. So a crucial part of the war and a crucial South African history, as we spoke about.
Yeah, absolutely. You're mixing up the two world wars. Beersheba was the First World War.
Oh, you're right. No, yeah, I apologize. No, you're correct.
Only a couple of years, not to worry about.
Wrong. Don't want to get the war wrong.
Yeah.
So then when did, so what was, I'm just trying to think then, who would have been the people who, what role would Palestine have played then in the war? They would have been a British mandate and stayed out of things, or what?
It was a British mandate. Egypt had a very interesting position, by the way. It was basically an independently country, run in conjunction with the British. There was an Egyptian army that didn't fight because they wanted to remain neutral. And they handled the rare areas. And the British took on the Germans. Very, very interesting situation. And Palestine, yeah, was a British mandate. Thing. And coming out of Palestine was the famous Jewish Brigade.
Yes.
That fought in the Desert War against Rommel. So, yeah, interesting history there.
If people want to find out more about that subject of history, because there are a lot of books that have been written and a lot of things that have been done, I mean, but it is quite a complicated, piece of history, but quite important. What would you say is a good basic resource if people are interested in that period?
Yeah, in which period are you talking about? The Desert War.
Desert War, yeah.
You can start off with my book, South Africans versus Rommel. That's a good start.
Well, because that's quite recently published.
Recently published in February.
Okay.
And yeah, there's many, many books in that period of the war. Jewish Brigade. I think the best thing to do about the Jewish Brigade is just give it a Google, and then you'll pick up the books that you can read about it. Fascinating thing. In fact, Dayan lost his eye fighting against the Vichy French in Syria.
Huh.
That's how Dayan got that eye patch. So that's very interesting. Against the Vichy French. Crazy. That
people who we've spoken about a lot today. Major David Katz, thank you so much for coming into the studio and chatting to us. Been a fascinating discussion about that whole, let's call it Mediterranean basin and the military history there. You'll be back next Monday.
Next Monday?
I'm
going to give it a miss. Next Monday is a public holiday.
Come on. You have to come in anyway, I think.
I'm out of here. I'm going to go somewhere to the coast. I want to go see the sea.
All right. Monday after then.
Monday after then.
There we go. Military Mondays on 101.9 KFM.